Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 90 of the Peak of Serenity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, we're going to be talking about some of the major news from the past week. We have a new interview from Ian Hazzikostas. We have the patch 9.2 PTR build being pushed to vendors, which means we may see a 9.2 PTR in the next week or so. And we also have the announcement of the World of Warcraft Community Council, which we both have some thoughts on. But before that, we have some other lighter news that happened this week. And we also maybe want to touch on how our reclears have been going.
Yeah, yeah, our typical section here. Do you want to start this week's, or do you want me to?
Sure. Yeah. So, my guild finally rekilled, or my team finally rekilled Painsmith.
So nice.
Too many pulls. I guess for context for people, like, we raid two nights a week. We raid Friday, Sunday. The week after we killed Sylvanas, we only did one night. Then we did two nights the next week. Did we? We did. And then the following week, we also only did one night because the second night was Halloween.
Yep.
So we've basically had a combined like two weeks of raiding across the previous three. And of course, since it's multiple resets, we were not extending on Painsmith. So we were spending a bunch of that time just reclearing the first five. But yeah, we got Painsmith back down. It still took longer than it should have, but it's not as crazy long as it might seem from the length of number of weeks it took us. But
nice.
Yep, working on Fate Scribe tonight. Should get that and Kel'Thuzad and maybe some pulls on Sylvanas. But our comp has changed a decent bit from our initial kill comp for Sylvanas, so I don't expect us to get a re-kill tonight, although we could. It's entirely possible.
Nice. Yeah, that's Painsmith is always, it's still a trouble. Even this week, I think Painsmith we spent the most time on. More than like Sylvanas and KT, which is crazy. So
yeah, the three bosses I hear about people like consistently having to spend a lot of pulls on, like a lot meaning like more than two or three, are Painsmith, Fate Scribe, and Sylvanas.
Yeah, that's definitely those are interesting ones. Yeah, we also did like our reclear was pretty clean. We went 8 of 10 on Tuesday, and then Thursday we cleaned up KT and Sylvanas. We ended up three healing KT, actually.
Yeah, how was that? Our healing officer has been talking about that.
It was easy, I'll say. It was weirdly easier because you have more DPS available upstairs, I think, so you get one more DPS upstairs basically, and right. Our issue was always getting like downstairs, really we had on lock, right? So upstairs, yeah. One more DPS is kicks, plus you kill things slightly quicker, right? We three healed it. To be fair, we wiped generally to like poor transitions or like people dying,
yeah,
went to like the avoidable stuff. So it was easy. It was a lot easier. Three healing, I think, is what we'll probably do moving forward. And we did it with just a priest, a shaman, and then me as a misweaver. So like, I don't think you need to stack shaman or stack like holy paladins, right? You could do it with like a barrier and an AM. And
so you could did you just like heal through the first set of the spikes with just misweaver, and then the second set you would, because you get three sets of spikes, right?
Yeah. But you can use. You use two sets of DR. So we did barrier on one and three, with a rally and a darkness, I think. Then we have AMZ for all of them. And then on the second one, it was AM. And like, I think I used revival on the second one. And we have a disc, so our disc has ramp for each one. So you basically just need like one DR, and then then it's pretty simple. So it was easy. And then Sylvanas was couple new faces on Sylvanas, but we ended up, we pushed her, what was it? I think our push timing coming out of phase two was like 76, I think. like 0.8 or something, like, or 0.7, like some ridiculously low number. So
I would say on our kill, I was actually just looking back at our kill VOD for that tonight to kind of refresh my memory on the fight, because I haven't seen it in a month. I think on our kill we got it to 76.9.
Yeah. So like, yeah, we were well under that.
It's it's wild how much smoother that makes that final burn.
Oh yeah, it's a joke. And then I mean, I think, and it's funny too, because we had like two or three new people like DPS into to kill it, and we didn't know where the damage came from. So I think it's because we had another Shadow Priest and something else. Okay. But yeah, Sylvanas was an easy kill. We were done probably like in 2 hours on Thursday. So spent maybe like 45 minutes on KT and then like an hour or so on Sylvanas to clean her up. And yeah, it was nice early. We got the skip now. So plan is to essentially kill everything but Painsmith each week. And then if people really need Painsmith, do Painsmith. So.
Oh man, all your Demon Hunters and Brewmasters and all of them are going to hate you.
Yeah. So I think we talked about it. We're basically going to do, like, our goal would be, first, like, do Teragru and then last two and then back clear for the bosses that people really need and go from there.
That's our plan as well once we get the skip.
But the nice part is we can basically save Painsmith for last if you really want, or do it earlier.
And boss of the instance.
Exactly. So, but no, reclear was cool. It was, we underhealed a couple other fights too. We went down to like 4 on the 9. 4 on Soul Render, which is actually, I think we've been doing 4 for a while. So basically 4 to heal essentially everything but KT, which was 3. So it was it wasn't too bad. So
nice.
Yeah. Well, cool. I guess let's keep it moving forward. Jump into what happened last week. So a couple quick things before we get into the big news, if you want. There was a bunch of raid tuning that went out with 915 with the patch. Because 915 was this week. So I guess, first of all, congratulations on making it to 915, a patch with absolutely zero actual content. I'm sorry. But a bunch of quality of life stuff. So,
Okay. The Warlock Gateway control shard is so good. It's so good.
I actually put that in the news. That was the second point to talk about. We can talk about it here.
Oh,
it's fine.
Okay. Yeah. No, you're fine. We can talk about it after, but oh my God, it's so nice.
Okay. No, let's just go into it. So yeah, so they dropped this new item, which is it was 100 gold from a vendor in Ouroboros. And basically it just, if it's an on-use item, then when you use it, it clicks or uses any Warlock Gateway near you. It's basically like previously what would end up happening is like, particularly when you'd all have to gate at a certain point, your entire raid, you'd focus the gateway endpoint and then you'd use like another keybind to basically, it's essentially like, what is it? Use on focus or like try and
interact
use your focus.
Mouse over.
Yeah.
And then you would mouse over your focus frame and you would interact with it. Yeah.
Gotcha.
It was janky as hell, but it worked. And it meant that you we're able to click the Warlock Gateway even with 20 people standing next to it.
Exactly. But now they added an item that just clicks the gateway for you. All you have to do is use the item. And it actually works really well. We had like one or two people who complained about the item not working or like them not being able to click it. But and our paladin at the start of the night, every time he used the item and took the gate, it disconnected him from the game.
Nice. Nice. So
a little bit of bugginess, but we got through it. I don't know about your feelings, but it's really awesome. But
I took my existing, so I have my key binding for interactive mouse over was Control Z. So I just took that, and instead of it being like something in the key bindings menu, I bound it to just a random action bar that's hidden, put the control shard on it. So now I can just like walk up to a gateway and hit Control Z and use it.
Oh yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful, beautiful change, I'll say. But yeah, that was, I mean, I guess that kind of counts as, it's not really new content. It's just new quality of life items.
It's making existing content better.
Exactly. So if they're going to continue to make these like Warlock Gates, I'm not going to say mandatory, but like integral to a strategy, like then, I think they need to give us something like this helpful.
There's several fights where like doing the fight without a Warlock Gate was just incredibly harder. Like going back I mean, Gahoon obviously basically mandatory that you had two after the nerfs, four originally. And then after that, there was what?
Could you sit on Mithrax right before Gahoon, right? To jump between two points.
That was super good.
Make it easier. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, the next one I remember being, like, basically mandatory was Carapace.
Yeah.
For baiting a puddle and then everybody gating across, because otherwise you, like, had to put a bunch of damage into clearing a pathway for your people to cross. And if you did it too early, then they would regrow and be immune and you couldn't actually, that was a mess.
It was awful. Yeah, it was awful, No, this is a cool new little item that they added, and yeah, we'll see. I mean, you'd almost think now that Blizzard can feel a little bit better about putting gate worthy mechanics into the game. So we'll see if that how that
you
or still what that does.
Do need a warlock in the raid,
right? But I mean, like, you almost consider like Blizzard at a certain level is like expecting you to have a warlock, right? Like you have.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point in Mythic Raiding, if you don't have a warlock, you're trolling.
Yeah, exactly.
Not even necessarily about gateways, just because of where they put the checkpoints in the instance.
Summoning.
Being able to like have a healer with a soul stone just take it and immediately res people instead of having to wait 3 minutes for them to run back is huge for spending your time more efficiently.
Oh, yeah.
Health stones are amazing. The ability to summon in between bosses is amazing. Honestly, like, gateway is nice, but at this point, I want a warlock in the raid, even if we're not using the gateway.
No, that's true. That's true. They do bring a lot. They do bring a lot. So that is fair. That is fair. So yeah. So I mean, cool new item they've added. It'll be fun to continue to use it and check it out and do all that fun stuff with it. So, So I guess some other changes with 915. They No, you're fine. Yeah. So they did a bunch of hot fixes to a lot of the Sanctum raids, right? So did a bunch of work with Remnant of Ner'zhul, basically reduced the overall health of not only the boss plus but the orbs. And then I guess now orbs should trigger kill credits for all abilities, such as Warlock Shadowburn. To get those, shard refunds. So we didn't, I'll tell you, I don't think we really noticed it other than we might have cut off one set of orbs, but.
We noticed it because it fucked with our push timing.
Gotcha.
We ended up at this awkward point where there was a set of malevolence dispels that was happening at the same time as our final shatter. And it was just a miserable overlap. We ended up just swapping a DPS for a healer, coincidentally a Mistweaver, topical. And just pushing the boss slower to compensate for it.
That's fair.
And we're probably not going to do that in the future, but for this week it was just we spent some pulls like getting to that point and just like not really having a good point to do the malevolence dispels and just so we just slowed it down. If we're going to stop damage before the third shatter anyway, we might as well just bring an extra healer and make the torments like trivial to heal through.
Exactly. Yeah. We ended up with like a weird like the way the I guess we did end up with a little bit of a weird timing because our we didn't get the right beams, so we ended up with like one or two orbs that stayed up through a shatter transition, which is like always rough.
Yeah,
like double triple stacks of stuff, so
yeah, that's really rough.
Yeah, but I mean other than that, this one's has always just continued to nerf their health.
I want to point out this is referring to way back. Do you remember our predictions for Sanctum?
No, wait. So the timing thing, right?
One of my predictions is that we would have a boss with really bad push timer nonsense.
Yeah,
nailed it.
Yeah, this one definitely has it. Definitely. I mean, like, yeah, I feel like there's a bunch that are really bad, but yeah, this one definitely has.
It's just every time we've recleared it, I think we've had to like do nonsense trying to work around the push timings. even during progression, because it got nerfed once during our progression. That changed our push timings again in the middle of prog, and that's super annoying.
Yeah, it's gotta love old Blizzard for that stuff. So, but yeah, then they also made not only to Ner'zhul, but they also made updates to Soulrender, basically reducing the Unleash Tyranny damage, which is on Chainbreak, the damage on Chainbreak by 15%, and then reduce the add health on Mythic by 5%. The Chainbreak damage, very noticeable, by the way. Basically, you don't run into that situation where people can be very low after a Chainbreak and then die to either the next Chainbreak almost immediately or to like any of the room damage. So I think Soulrender, we four-healed it, and I don't think anybody was really in danger the entire time. So
yeah, the add damage reduction, not really noticeable in contrast. I honestly had forgotten that went in. Add damage hasn't been an issue for us for forever, so not really noticing that one.
Yeah, the only time it was bad for us on our first pull this week, because one of our DKs swaps to tank it just to pull the adds away with like grip and stuff like that. He didn't have the old grip legendary on, so it made it a little bit repositioning. Yeah. Everything. It was a little bit more difficult than it should have been. But no, yeah. So Soulrender, nice damage reduction changes on the major piece. Painsmith got an update, another one. The spike balls have been removed from the first intermission on Mythic difficulty. My only question is why?
I have a theory about why. And I think Panini had a theory about why. I might go and pull it up in a second. Yeah. But my theory about why is that it is demoralizing to wipe 90 seconds into a boss over and over again. So this isn't about making the fight easier, although I guess technically it does, even if it might make your progression slightly longer, because now in order to progress the actual intermission, you have to make it through the second phase as well. It makes it less demoralizing because you don't just get to see phase one and then intermission one over and over again for the first, 80 pulls or whatever it's taking people at this point. And then start seeing phase two. Like, you get to now make it through the first intermission sooner, and then start getting into phase two and work on that. So that's my theory on why. I will say it was kind of funny watching our raid move around balls that weren't there during the first intermission. That was kind of funny. I was like, yes, there would normally be a ball here. I don't know. Like, I feel like this actually did make progression on this boss harder, because you're going to learn bad habits in the first intermission that don't work in the second.
Right. Yeah. No, that was the thing too, is that like the other thing is I had a friend who was still progressing on this one. And for him, you're right. I think it's less demoralizing, but then also it gets you into phase three with more battle reses available. Like, just, you have more leeway, because like his team was wiping a lot in phase one without the balls. They were able to do it pretty consistently, having everyone live through it. And then they had extra reses up in the final phase to eke out a little bit more damage. So, Painsmith, our team still dies to like the tank lines in phase two anyway. Like, that's still the hardest part of that fight for us. So
yeah, that was actually the hardest part for us as well. This past couple of weeks is just crossing the spike wave.
Yeah.
So real quick, Pau's more cynical take. I'm going to steal from a private channel, so I hope he's not mad. I'm pretty sure the spiked balls one is someone looking at fight progress statistics and going, most groups spend a long time on intermission one, but breeze through the rest. Let's remove that barrier. Not realizing that now they're just going to spend that time on intermission two.
Exactly. Yeah. Learning it. Yeah. Which, like, there's two ways you look at it. Like, for me, I'm always more of a fan of wiping early to something versus late, right? So, like, for me, I would have, like, this would probably bother me a little bit more than it should if I was progressing on this fight with, like, knowing that the hard part was getting into P2. So, like, any mistake in P1 or the first intermission would just, like, be awful. I don't know. It almost heightens that sort of, like, annoyance when they do it this way versus like, all right, intermission, like the intermissions are the same. They're both difficult. It's okay if people wipe. They just need to like learn it, right?
Right. So. There was that thing, and this is something that I think you know, both our guilds probably had decently in mind is that a wipe in intermission one is a wipe that you don't have in intermission two, right? You're learning something in intermission one, it also applies in intermission two, so you're that knowledge translates. Not so much anymore.
No. Now I have nothing to hit in the intermission, so like my healing is like, our disc was a little upset. Not being able to hit anything, so.
Yeah. At least the first intermission doesn't have that much to heal.
That's true. That's fair. All right, and there was a couple more changes on Sylvanas here as the final boss, but really only one that hit Mythic, which was they reduced the damage of Ranger Shot by 15%. So this, I don't know about you as a tank, I actually felt this healing our tanks. There's a couple points, particularly just in P1, where they dip a little low, just because there's other damage going on or there's other things going on. Never really in danger, just dip. And like, they didn't dip at all this week. So I don't know if this is something more noticeable for you.
Ranger Shot is super inconsistent. So for people who may not be familiar with the tanking end of this fight, Ranger Shot is what she is supposed to cast when her threat target is out of melee range. If they're in melee range, she's not supposed to cast it. Sometimes she does anyway. Sometimes she chain casts it while you're in melee. You know, we've had people post logs like, what am I supposed to do about this? And they've got, you know, Ranger Shot cast on them, you know, six times in a row. And they're in melee, and it's like, well, there's nothing you can do, like get external sit CDs. So the other thing is that Ranger Shot, every time it gets cast, deals more damage until she casts like some melee ability, basically. So in theory, like this never matters. In practice, it does sometimes matter because Ranger Shot could totally like murk a tank when they're running in after she does a teleport in phase one. I do want to point out though, that I've got our tank damage from our Sylvanas skill pulled up.
Yeah.
Find Ranger Shot.
I guess it's low. Maybe something else is happening. I thought it was a bigger amount of their damage. Interesting.
So she casted a total of 16 times on us. And it is, whoopsie. You know, the majority of it is in phase one and phase two. So the phase two stuff is while people are running to Sylvanas, basically. So that's like number one danger point from Ranger Shot. And now what this change does do is make it less likely that your tank just gets murdered by Sylvanas just chain casting Ranger Shot because of an awkward push timing in phase two. It does do that. That's pretty good. But as like, far as nerfing the damage that tanks take, it does absolutely nothing because virtually all of the damage is still in Banshee's Bane and Banshee's Mark.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Interesting.
The fight is something like 60 or 70% magic damage for tanks. It's really silly.
That's crazy. Interesting. Well, I mean, so then basically just, yeah, not much in terms of the overall changes. So
it should mean that you, like, don't have to deal with random wipes in phase two pushes as often.
Gotcha. That's fair.
Basically is what it boils down to, which is like fair and valuable. Like that's not nothing. It's just not a big change.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, yeah, I think those are all the changes. The only other thing I wanted to talk about before we go through a little bit further is the covenant swapping. So with 915, now you can sort of freely covenant swap. Have you or anybody in your raid taken advantage of it or?
Bunch of people. We have instituted in our raid a rule that you can covenant swap while you are out or during break.
Okay.
And that is it. Because you still have to go back to Orbos. People have figured out, you know, macros now to let you get your soul binds without having to go back to the covenant hall. But you do have to go back to Orbos, which means that if you're doing it between every boss, you have to like Hearthstone and then get summoned back. It's a lot of time spent if you're trying to do that between every boss with, you know, half the raid every time. So we've been limiting it for people. But yeah, we've got a bunch of people that have been swapping covenants, playing different things. I haven't done it yet because I honestly just haven't wanted to do the renowned grind on Necrolord.
Yeah.
But I will be. Especially now, there's one thing we can talk about before we get into our main topics. Some new Brewmaster tech that has appeared due to the 915 special delivery changes.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. Let's touch on that before we get to the end of this. So cool. Well, yeah. So it's, yeah, we've also had a couple people swap. I have not. I just don't care enough. Venthyr's too good to actually. Venthyr.
Yeah. We have people who are like, our hunters, I think, are probably one of the primary that they're doing this is like, Venthyr is very good single target for Beast Mastery. And then Wild Spirits is obviously super good on AoE. Yeah. So swapping between those two mainly.
Interesting. Okay. Fair enough. Actually, speaking of, maybe we'll talk about this under the Brewmaster tech section. There's a Mistweaver thing I wanted to bring up. Okay. So cool. So I guess one other thing before we get into the classic stuff is Blizzard did confirm that Conquest and Valor are uncapped until season 2 ends. So basically from now until really 9.2, Valor and Conquest are uncapped. So farm to your heart's content to farm any Valor you might need or any Conquest you might need just to sort of stockpile it.
Is it still only like 35 Valor per dungeon?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they've changed the amount of Valor, but there's no longer a cap where you can't get enough to do something. So it lets you grind it, really, really grind it if you want to.
Does mean that, you know, if you are primarily gearing through Mythic Plus, you can continue to upgrade your gear at a much better rate. If like Mythic Plus is your thing, previously it would have taken an exceptionally long patch for you to be able to upgrade every single piece of your gear to max high level with Valor. So it's an improvement.
Yeah.
Would also love a little bump to the rate at which you acquire Valor. Because it's kind of low.
That would be helpful.
What is it? You can get like 700 a week.
That was the previous cap.
That was the cap. It would go up by 700 a week. But that's like 20 dungeons a week.
Yeah, it was a lot. I mean, you got some of the quests like you could do in there, but yeah, it was generally it's still a lot to cap out. So
yeah, a lot easier to cap Conquest than to cap Valor in terms of time spent.
For sure. So that's sort of the 9.15 wrap up. It went live this week. You know, nothing new in terms of content. Like I think I joked about, we'll see that early on in December with Mage Tower and Legion Time Walking. So.
Yeah,
that'll be interesting. So a couple of just real quick news items on I might probably start including this just a little bit more because I'm interested in actually trying this out is Season of the Mastery, which is the new sort of Classic Plus release that they're doing. Blizzard released a bunch of really a larger blog post in terms of like what they're doing for Season of the Mastery. Sort of the beta test wraps up and they're getting ready to launch here in the next like week or two. To launch this. So the biggest thing is
like 9 days, right?
Forget the date. It's
November 16th. I'm pretty sure it's so November 9th is this Tuesday. November 16th would be the following Tuesday, which sounds right to me.
It does. Yeah. And I think the 11th, they open servers for names. So you can create a character and reserve your name, on a server on the 11th. So it's very close. So they did release a huge sort of just write up about what they're doing. The thing is they're basically speeding up a little bit of what they're of from your acquisition or like content wise. Right. So certain things are going to be available from launch, like Dire Maul will be there right at the start. A lot of the updated dungeon rewards will be in from the start. So stuff that came in later will be available like. The dungeon set twos, like the tier 0.5 gear will all be in at the start. Like Librams and Totems and Idols will all drop from their new locations or their newer locations. And even a lot of the rep vendors will be available with their items. So just in general, they've sort of added a lot of stuff to launch that wasn't there until later content patches, I think because of the speed, which is cool. So be able to sort of, gather better gear sooner, as you go through your journey here. Other big thing is they've basically come out and said like no major class changes. So they're probably going to continue to work on bug fixes, they said, but they're not really talking about making changes to the class and the way they play, which, good, bad. I think this is sort of their first forte into it. And I think
I think this is a good approach. I would be personally afraid of them applying the modern class sensibilities to classic classes and it just not fitting with the game of that time period, you know. Like, not to say that the classes of classic are phenomenal, but I actually do think that for outside of like doing high-end PvP or PvE content, like if you're not doing raids and you're not doing like dungeon speed clears and stuff, the classes of classic are actually in a lot of ways better than the classes of now.
Yeah, I mean, I think with anything, there's some broken stuff in each one of them, but in general, they're just fleshed out. So like, you know, they're not needing an additional system like people like to sort of joke about and add in with like to cover it off, or to sort of enhance the class. They added all that, they sort of put up this big post, which is cool. I think some people from my point of view, right, with this is that this is sort of their first forte into this sort of like classic plus type development,
right?
And I'm probably, I mean, I don't know this for sure, but my guess is that the team doing this is like a fraction of the overall team that supports all of Classic. So in that regard, like doing class changes or like building anything, like adding in more major changes to things, I think just isn't something that they want to do.
Bandwidth for.
Yeah, they just don't have the people to support it. So
it's also something where if they don't touch the classes, people know that they're imbalanced and are going to accept that they're imbalanced because it's accurate to the time period. If they start touching the classes, then people are going to start asking for balance changes to the classes. And there's already some of that. Like they mentioned in the blog post that people are concerned about the higher health that they have put on a bunch of bosses, meaning that mana restricted classes get worse. In a world where like, I think warrior and rogue are apparently like the meta DPS.
Mm-hmm.
But they are apparently unconcerned about that right now based on the testing data that they got. So we will see. From my understanding of how classic rating actually played out, you know, unless you're like never stopping to drink because you're doing a speed clear of the whole Molten Core instance, mana was never a restriction on any of these bosses on classic, you know, anyway.
Right.
So
yeah, and I think like anything, like as if you're not pushing for those sort of like world first speed clears and all that type of stuff, right? Like the impact of like warriors being amazing or like shamans, of course, being absolutely ridiculous on Horde, right? Is like it's less there. I think you can still play whatever you want. So yeah, for me, them sort of having the stance of like no class changes, of like just changing sort of the way that the season plays, or the way that the game plays in terms of its overall systems, is a much better approach. Just I think with the amount of people they put into it, right? This isn't a full development team working on this, and I don't think it'll ever will be. So this will be their sort of like, well, maybe it'll be a full development team if this is well liked or well received.
Successful, but, yeah.
Yeah. I can tell you though that like, I have a couple of old guildmates that participate in like the current speed run, I guess, competition in TBC, and none of them are playing this. And like the biggest reason is like world buffs aren't there. So it's just like
that's such a weird reason to me.
And I talked to him about it. Yeah. It is I don't understand it either. But I guess the point of like the thing is like for them, the game isn't the gear and it isn't the fights. It's like doing it quickly. So like they don't care about anything other than being the fastest team to do something. So like if that's their goal, then like not having world bosses doesn't, I don't know. It's like the no world buffs, the like changes to the fights, things like that. They're just like, we just want to be the fastest to do this. And maybe there's a community that picks up, but at least the two or three people that, I mean, they're I think they own the top spot right now, or they're like top three right now. So, like they're well progressed in it. They're not planning on doing like swapping to do Classic Plus, and I don't think anybody else is, or Season of the Mastery, sorry. So
That's such a weird, like you can still be the fastest in Classic Plus without world buffs. Can see the boss changes being something that they wouldn't necessarily be a fan of, because the boss changes are, it's like a lot of bosses in early vanilla raids are just glorified trash mobs. Trash mobs. Even in some of the later raids, they're just glorified trash mobs. So I can see, like, if you're speedrunning, that's a lot more appealing than having an actual boss. But, like, right. you can still have that competition and, you know, go through it while also having this other stuff there. So that, as a reason, just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But I can see why, given that they probably were already doing speed clears of vanilla raids prior to BC launch, why they wouldn't be interested in going back to do more speed clears of classic raids on yeah. Classic Plus. That definitely would make sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. I'll be interested to see, like, if there's a community that pops up around this. Actually, like, I think I've talked about this enough. I'm actually really excited to try and dive into this, right? Because yeah. I think it might be fun. But
are you playing Alliance or Horde this time?
Probably Horde still, because I really want to play Shaman. But, like,
okay, fair enough.
As a healer, I really want to play Shaman. So, also within this season, they also put out, or I don't know if they did, but WoW had put out their sort of updates to all the different Molten Core bosses that are changing, and they basically listed out a bunch of things. I think we talked about maybe this briefly last week, but a lot of them are just like,
yeah,
if the boss had two adds, now it has four adds, or if the boss got a like an enrage buff.
These changes are not very thing.
Now the enrage buff
like,
is always
true
there.
To their description. They are not like making, you know, modern raid fights out of these. You know, looking through it is Lucifron has two adds instead of, or four adds instead of two. Magmadar spawns core hounds while he's enraged, more lava bombs, Gehenos, more adds, casts Rain of Fire more often. Gar has adds spawn now. Like, there's just a bunch of, like, it's like one change, two changes, stuff casting more frequently, more adds. Sometimes introducing adds that weren't there before. Although I think the only one that really happens on, so Gar and Magmadar, but Magmadar was not a boss. Magmadar was a trash mob, and I will fight people.
Yeah. No, I agree. Agreed.
The one that I think is actually most interesting to me is that Sulfuron, with the adds that are in his room, now have a shared health pool. So you can't like zerg down the priests and then kill the Sulfuron.
Yep.
Or the other way around. So.
Yeah, that was, I saw a couple of those. So it'll be fun to see like how the fights change maybe. Like even if it's just slightly, right? Like doing something slightly different. That's really the joke that I always had for, you know, we had one of my buddies in the guild that I raid in that went to go play classic, one of the healers. Like, that was always my joke with him, was like, you're literally playing a game we beat 15, 16 years ago. Like, what's the point? So like them making changes, I think will at least bring me in as someone who, like, I don't care about doing the same fights over and over again, but like doing something new in like the classic sort of gameplay model would be interesting to me.
Yeah. I am interested in seeing the new leveling, mostly. I got to the mid-40s on my classic druid before kind of petering out. And that was without... I didn't do any dungeons or anything with anybody. I purely played solo. Because I was, you know, hopping on late at night after work. It's like 3 a.m. and I'm not. I'm sorry. I'm not getting in the Zul'Farrokh group at 3 a.m.
No.
But yeah, I'm interested in hopping in and seeing what the leveling changes are like. So maybe I'll actually hit 60 this time. Maybe not. My Burning Crusade character is still not 60. So
nice. Yeah. I think I maxed out at like 38, right around you, a little bit lower than you, but 38 on my priest in classic. So before I sort of was done. So we'll see if it changes. But cool, I guess moving a little bit on, one final announcement, and then we'll sort of touch on our new Mistweaver / Brewmaster tech, and then into the actual topic, is Jen O'Neill is stepping down from Blizzard Entertainment. So she was, of course, promoted along with Mike Ybarra to co-lead the studio after Jalen Brack and the lawsuit went through. So she is stepping down. And I guess now Mike will be the studio head moving forward.
Yeah, Mike Ybarra, which, this does not look good.
No, it does not from like an optics perspective, externally looking in. You wonder though, like, so Jen O'Neill, just a little bit of background. She came from Vicarious Visions, which was a studio that Activision purchased a couple years ago. And even before the lawsuit announcement, Vicarious Visions did most of the work on Diablo 2. Was it Resurrected or Reborn or whatever they called it? And so she was studio head over there. So they were already merging Vicarious Visions into Blizzard at the time of this. So making her sort of co-head maybe makes sense. And like, it's tough. She basically just said, hey, I'm excited about the future, you know, all this type of stuff. The typical like goodbye type messaging, PR laid messaging. But yeah, behind the scenes, I wonder if this was it could have go one of two ways. Either the cynical nature of me would be like, she wanted to make a bunch of changes, or like she got upset that it was like a co-lead opportunity. Right. And she was like, I can't, let me handle this on my own. She's like, I've led a studio before, a very good studio in Vicarious Visions. You don't want to give me the reins here. Like, this is ridiculous. And like, you know, sort of ended it that way. Or it was just like, she wanted, I mean, Vicarious Visions is much smaller than Blizzard Entertainment. And maybe that was like, she's like, I want a studio that like I've crafted, I've built. It's like in my sort of like, maybe not image, but like some people like have that sort of thing. Like they want their hands around or like their DNA on the way something runs. And that's like, maybe to me, that's like the optimistic view of it is like, she tried this out, realized it didn't work. Like it wasn't for her, like from a professional perspective, and was like, all right, I'm just going to take a step back. Right.
Yeah.
So,
the less optimistic view is that having her take over as co-lead was always a PR move. That it was just kind of like a token woman leader thing. And, I don't know which it is. I try not to be too pessimistic, but this does not look good. No, not even 3 months. Yeah. Not even 3 months.
Optically looks bad. Without any, I mean, to be fair, like, and nothing got done in those 3 months, technically. Right? Like 915 dropped, but like other than that, there's been no other major work from any of the franchises at Blizzard, right? I guess
D2R came out.
D2R did come out. Yeah, I guess that's true. And that got really good reviews. So I guess
that was from her studio too. So
yeah. Yeah, which makes this even worse, actually. Somehow.
Yeah.
Makes this worse. Like the best product put out in probably the last 2 or 3 years from Blizzard, the lead of that like studio that did that work is now leaving. Yeah. Actually, to be fair, it's getting worse and worse by the second as I think about this.
Yeah, we should move on.
Yeah, no, for sure. It sucks that we're losing her, but I mean, you know, like I think I've said this before, like I really like Mike and I've known of Mike for a while now. So I think he's a good guy, but we'll see. So before we get into the topic, so you said you had some secret brewmaster tech based on Keg Smash?
No, special delivery. So a special delivery, for those that may not remember, got buffed by 100%. Pretty substantial buff. By the numbers, it was still not as good as Rushing Jade Wind with a standard legendary build, standard Covenant setup. But some entrepreneur went into a dungeon with the Mighty Poor legendary on, which is very good in high keys. And they were like, hey guys, they posted a link of their details, and they're like, hey guys, this is kind of a lot of damage. We had not considered the fact that the Mighty Poor legendary gives you, when you cast Purifying Brew, you have like a 50% chance or something to not have its cooldown consumed. Something ridiculous like that. Special delivery throws a keg in the air that lands and does damage every single time you consume a brew. So the special deliver Mighty Pour basically buffs the damage from special delivery in a way that it doesn't with Rushing Jade Wind, turning Mighty Pour into both a defensive and offensive legendary. There's some downside to this. There's basically no snap threat. You literally cannot cast Purifying Brew until you've taken damage. And even once you do cast Purifying Brew, it takes about 2 seconds for a keg to land.
Yeah.
So the damage is good in a sustained sense, but it is not good in a snap threat sense. So Storm Snout's Glass Keg is still better for that.
Mm-hmm.
But for on AoE, it is basically strictly better, like for dungeons, than the other options for hierarchies because of the sustained damage. The ability to dictate that you will have a misdirect in the group for pulse. And then if you're playing Necrolord, it's just always better.
Okay.
I believe Kyrian is still better in raids than Necrolord is overall, but if you are playing Necrolord, the Mighty Boar Legendary is like really good now. It was already like good in high keys. Now it's just like good because you can use special delivery and just like, you know, orbital keg people all day long.
Yeah, just, yeah, do a bunch of extra damage, yeah, for free essentially. That's awesome. That's interesting. Yeah, and so okay, awesome. So basically, like from a legendary ranking perspective, this I'm assuming this moves then Mighty Poor, like basically to one of the best, like in the conversation at this point, right?
Yeah, like so it was already on our list as one that you would use in higher keys. Basically, regardless of Covenant, it's just a very solid defensive legendary. This gives it the damage component that it didn't really have before. In theory, you could use it before for some extra damage with Invoke Niazhao, but really the limiter on Invoke Niazhao is always how much damage you're taking, not how much damage you can purify. Yeah. So that wasn't really a thing. But now this gives it also a damage component, which really actually helps it catch up to both Storm Snout's Last Keg and to Charred Passions. It is still like behind them in SimSy theory, but in practice, having a really strong defensive component tied to your legendary that also does pretty good damage is valuable. Like, we are still tanks.
Yeah, you still got to prevent that damage. Well, that's awesome. That sounds like at least a net positive, which is cool. Very much different than the Mistweaver change this week. In the patch notes, Blizzard mentioned two things about Fallen Order and the Crane Adepts that get spawned. One was the fact that they were removing the haste scaling from their cast, which we never really knew what that meant. Abe has a theory as to why they use the word haste there, which is a word that we used in a bug post once. But in any event, the second thing they did was they said, well, now every adept will cast two enveloping mists over the duration of its lifespan.
Yeah.
That change never went in. So we now see that basically it's functioning very similar to how it did before the patch, which is you will potentially get two. Most of the time, you still get one. When you use Sinister Teachings, by the way, there is one adept that's like ultra buffed, right? That lasts for the full duration. That adept will sometimes cast three or two enveloping mists. So it's all over the place. So we did a bunch of testing this week, and it's the interesting part is we think, like, so I don't think, I'll say the, not the we, but I think it's actually working as intended. The problem is that the second cast is based on damaged allies near you. So the only way an adept will cast a second enveloping mist is if there is someone damaged nearby, which to my point, basically it lines up on the fights that have a higher than normal amount of casts and fights that have a lower one, right? So like Guardians and Fate Scribe generally have a high, like when we looked at logs, generally have a higher number of two casts versus just single casts. Where like a fight like earlier on, like even like Painsmith and some of the earlier bosses, they'll have more.
Saying is if you drop a healer for a Mistweaver, the Mistweaver gets even more HPS as a result.
Potentially. So it still doesn't work exactly right, because we've also seen logs where like an adept has cast one and then essentially died, but the entire raid was never at full HP over the course of its lifespan. So
yeah,
I don't know if it's true or not. That's my theory. Like, I don't think Abe or I was talking to like Abe and Volk and Onion and those guys. I don't think they really also agree with that assessment, but in any event, it's not casting two consistently. So while Mistweavers might be rocking a ton of HPS right now, we're missing some. So it's not consistent. So that's the fun testing we did this week, looking at a bunch of early logs. So Maybe one day Blizzard will get this right. We'll see.
Maybe one day.
Yeah. So that all is right. That's the Mistweaver fun this week. So
I think, yeah, that's wild. I can't, yeah. I mean, I can't believe it. I just can't believe it.
Yeah. The biggest change didn't go in. So
you want to, so for our main topic, I was thinking we would go in a different order than we've got in our notes.
Sure.
I want to just start with the 9.2 PTR. This is something that I think will be brief. Ian did mention it in his interview. We will get to the interview in a minute. But WoW had noticed that there's a 9.2 PTR build of the client up on the CDN right now. Or, well, right now, they noticed this on, like, Thursday.
Yep.
Which typically means that we would see something like a 9.2 PTR next week, meaning, like, the 9th, or the following week. Which is a lot sooner than I expected.
Yeah, I mean, not, I would say that maybe not sooner than I expected. Like, my, well, this sort of feeds a little bit into the Ian interview, but like, from what I've read and like what I've seen with 9.1.5 being so light in terms of actual content, like, you would almost hope that the team isn't just sitting there twiddling their thumbs. That's and like true.
There's like content people that can do things outside of like class tuning and
exactly
work.
Yeah, so my assumption is that like 9.2, while even while they were working on 9.1.5, was still like well underway. So like, I don't know if it's early. I think the biggest thing right now is like, when does this come out? Is the biggest question. Because even with PTR in the next 2 weeks, like, PTRs are generally about 3 months long. That puts us in like the January, February timeframe, right? In terms of like a launch. But they also have holidays over that period. So does it push it a little bit later in February, early March timeframe? So
Well, I would love, okay, and this is completely unfounded in any reality. I would love if our 100th episode of the podcast were the week of 9.2 release, or the week before.
10 weeks.
I think, in theory, because we're probably going to, like, I wouldn't be surprised if we missed an episode for Thanksgiving and then missed another
one. Oh, yeah.
So yeah, 12 weeks, which is 3 months.
That would be pretty fun. That would actually be pretty fun. That would be pretty cool.
That would be cool.
But PTR soonish for 9.2, which is cool. It'll be good to see what they actually have planned for 9.2 in terms of, I mean, story and raid and all that type of stuff. So yeah,
I think just having people be able to see, oh, there's content on the horizon, you know, is going to do some things as well. I will note as well, actually, this is more related actually to the Classic Plus release, but Final Fantasy's expansion got delayed by 2 weeks.
I did.
It
I
was
saw that.
Going to launch the week after Classic Season of the Mastery. Now it will launch 3 weeks after, which does give people time that maybe, you know, they weren't planning to spend on Classic because they just, like, why spend only a week playing an MMO, right? Yeah. But maybe now that it's 3 weeks, people will go, okay, you know, I don't have anything else to do, so I'll do that now.
We'll see.
Still not going to line up with any 9.2 release in any reality.
No. So you'll be able to get your Final Fantasy time in, which, yeah, good or bad. It'll give folks time to play all the games they want to rather than like them all jamming it together. So, I'm excited for
the Legion time walking now, though.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It does. Yeah, first week of December. Yep. But it's just Mage Tower. You do that in like a day or two. It'll be fine.
Yeah. It'll be fine. So that's the 9.2 stuff. Fingers crossed we see stuff from that soon. I'm excited. 9.1.5 has brought a lot of good quality of life changes, and I really wish that the 0.5 patches from both earlier this expansion and from BFA had brought this kind of quality of life. Just a lot of the little things like the Warlock control shard, Gateway control shard. Just take them the 0.5 patches and use them to make the game smoother. That's it. That'd be so nice.
Yeah, or, I don't know, start with a smoother experience, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Next up, we have the WoW Community Council, which BlizzRed put up a blue post about.
Yeah.
So the gist of this, I'm not going to play the video, but the gist of this is that they are establishing a public forum that only people that are on the council can post in and developers can post in. And that is going to be used for feedback. And they are accepting applications from, you know, the whole community. Anybody that wants to join the council can put in an application. Most of those applications are going to be rejected just due to the like law of large numbers. But this is, well, one thing about this is that it, the video from the video, which I'm not going to play, but from the video and from some of the things that Ian said in the interview, I get the sense that this is directed more towards casual players. They want this to be something that they're not getting a bunch of mythic raiders and PvPers in this council, because they already have ways to talk to those people.
Well, they did,
but they, well, okay, fair, but okay, so first off, why is this public?
Yeah, so number one, I think it's Blizzard, I think this reeks to me, by the way, of just like a PR stunt in terms this of like, hey, we're listening. Because they've had this set up before. And I think the problem is that they get, if you follow any sort of WoW Twitter when this came out, or any sort of issues that people might have had over the past couple of years, you'll start to see some older players and some older community members have posted their experiences in sort of other situations like this, where like there's been private forums before, which are just like high-end players conversing with devs on certain topics. There's been Discords when Discord became a thing, right? There's still a Discord, like there is a content creation Discord where like a bunch of content creators sit with Blizzard, and like, well, it's mostly for like interviews and things like that for content stuff. Gameplay comes up and discussions like that occur, right? And so they've had these sort of pockets of interaction with the community, right, before. And it's always been, Blizzard's never commented on it, but it's always been the players to comment negatively on their experiences, right, with the way that it's always turned out. And so this is, I think, Blizzard's way of saying, look, we want to listen, quote unquote, want to listen to the community. When it gets your feedback, we want us to make this game better together, right? The biggest problem with this, and at least my biggest problem with this, is like they've already had this in basically spades previously. Right. In spades, in terms of like feedback that people give them. And so to me, this is just like, they already ask us for feedback through like, I've given feedback through Twitter. I've given feedback through bug reports. They've done it on the beta forums or alpha forums, right? For like class feedback threads. Like the monk one is notorious in Shadowlands for literally having the most posts and the most views in terms of community, but like 4 blue posts over the course of its life. Right.
Yeah.
And so like, to me, this really just looks like a PR stunt to say like, hey, we're listening to you guys. Here's a bunch of, you know, public posts that you as the quote, you as the community want, and here's our responses to it.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's just,
there's two things to me that really make it look like a PR stunt. One is that they don't acknowledge the existence of other like ways of getting feedback. Like the stated purpose of this is basically they're looking for something that's got a high signal to noise ratio, and the normal forums have just a really like a lot of noise. There's just a lot of noise. There's just a lot of stuff happening all the time. Same thing with Discords. If you're trying to be in all, you know, 12 class Discords or 16 class Discords or however many there are, at the same time, there's just a lot of noise. But they don't acknowledge the fact that they, again, already had that. They don't just explain what the problem with that was. If the problem with those, with the secret forums, with the MDI Discord, with the AWC Discord, if with the content creation Discord, if they see those as being problematic or limited in some way, that should be addressed. It should have been addressed either in this post or in something to the people in those Discords, which it clearly wasn't, because all of them, even the people that are still in those Discords, have said nothing to that effect.
Right.
You know, like, so they've not only had a high signal to noise ratio source of feedback. They've had multiple of them for a decade now, at least, and haven't used them, haven't made good use of them. Like, there's a Twitter thread that we're not really going to talk too much about today, but from somebody that was in the AWC Discord around the start of BFA that, you know, had receipts and said, basically, we complained in the Discord that the defensive Azurite traits were going to just completely break the arena tournament. And they were like, they completely ignored their feedback, left them in, and they had to like ban the use of them halfway through the tournament.
That's always been like, I get like here, that's always been the funniest thing to me about this whole like Blizzard wants feedback sort of conversation, is that if that was the first time it's ever happened, I'd be like, all right, well, they met like Blizzard thought they're right. They messed up. Yeah. It's fine. But like that same thing, you can take that same thing of community told Blizzard about X was going to be bad or broken or whatever. Blizzard said nothing about it. And then 6 months later, 3 months later, what the community said actually came true. And that's like, there's multiple instances of that, right? There's right. plenty of times where that's happened. So
So I want to say, from my recollection, having not actually been in one of these secret forums myself, I've had people try and get me access to the secret forums, and it's never been given. I blame the Fedded log post, but that's just me. But the thing that I remember as kind of being the genesis of this stuff is, do you remember the Warlock developer from MOP? That they had private channels of communication with Warlock players and got feedback and took feedback. And when, you know, kind of ended up getting sacked as a direct result of that.
Right.
And, you know, not from a legal perspective getting fired over it, but from a practical perspective getting pushed out of the team over it. And they set up, from my understanding, they set up the secret forums around that same time to kind of build on that success without actually taking any of the feedback from it in the way that that developer had.
Right.
And that's been kind of the story of all of their feedback channels ever since. You know, they say they want feedback, but every time feedback has been given, it's been at best ignored.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Or like, I mean, not only ignored, but like, I think ignored would be the nice way of saying it. Sometimes it's been actively like pushed back on.
Yeah.
Like in the very similar vein of like, you think you do, but you don't type sort of mentality, right? Like that sort of same idea is like, well, you think you know what's right, but you really don't, because I'm a developer at Blizzard. I work on World of Warcraft. It's a tiny game. You might've heard of it. You know, it's like, that's sort of like the idea. And so, I mean, the other thing too about this is if it's really for the larger community in general, it's going to fail, just straight up. Like, and the biggest reason is that like, there is, for me, like, to give good feedback, you really have to understand how things are put together, right? And like, as a casual player for any game, like, so I'll use myself as an example in a game like PoE, like Path of Exile. I know, like, I can follow a build guide. I know how the game plays. I understand ARPGs. I will never give feedback on abilities in Path of Exile because, number one, I have very little understanding for how that game hooks together, right? Like, I don't understand how skills hook together. I don't understand how systems fit together.
But you
I
can just follow enjoy a build it. Guide and play the game.
Exactly. I can play the game. I play casually. I play like, you know, 2-3 weeks every season that comes out. I have a blast, right? Similarly, if they do that same idea in WoW, like you're going to get less, and not that I'm not trying to disparage people who play the game casually, because that's not what I'm coming across as. My point is that you have less experience overall with the game. And so your feedback is more pointed in one small area that doesn't look at a larger picture, right? Yeah. Or doesn't look at like, hey, professions are bad. Like, we never get to make any cool items anymore. And it's like, well, like, there's a bigger reason for that because of the way like the reward structure is built in WoW. So like, to change that, you have to fundamentally change the reward structure, which, right?
I don't see that fundamentally as a problem, because ultimately the role of the development team and the community managers taking the feedback is to filter that feedback into something that's actionable, and to, whether we like it or not, discard the feedback that's not good. Because like, let's be honest, there is a lot of feedback that isn't good.
Right, but I think that...
But you do have a point, because, well, for one thing, if they want to know, for example, if they want to get feedback from the people that primarily engage with the game through the auction house and professions, there's a great way for them to do that. There's multiple forums that are for those people that have a lot of people active on them, you know, the Tradesco Master forums have for a long time been like very active for that player base yep. that was very engaged in it. Go read those. Go and talk to them. Go and talk to Sapo or whoever is working on TSM now. Who do you think is going to get the feedback on like what people think about it? Like the people that are running that project are going to hear more about the state of professions than perhaps any other people on the planet.
Oh yeah.
Like you don't need to like get randos into a public, which I'm going to get to public yeah. forum. You need to take advantage of the places that the information is already flowing. Right. And that's kind of what they were trying to do, but well, that's kind of what they had. They had the MDI Discord. They had the AWC Discord. I don't know if they still have them because I'm not in either of those. As well as the secret forums that were more for like, you know, I guess they were invite only and developers invited people that they thought gave good feedback, even though they ignored it all. But, you know,
yeah. yeah.
As well as things like we know the high ends like world first raid teams have direct channels of feedback to the counter designers and things like that. They like, I don't see what purpose this serves other than a PR stunt.
Yeah. Yeah. And and that's what I'm saying is like, if it's for bringing the broader player base into these sort of forums, I think it's just a bad idea. Like, no offense, but like someone who's played the game like on and off for like a year or two is going to give just, I feel like in a general sense, they will give, you know, worse feedback than someone who's played the game for like 15 years and has played it at a fairly high level or just has that much more experience playing it, right? And it's not that the person who's played it less, their opinions like means less. I just think feedback wise you just have less experience to draw on and like less and I don't know.
I do understand like they do want to get access to the kind of people that were like me, that I had played the game for, you know, 12 years or whatever, and basically only ever like leveled characters and played casually, but I played a lot, but it was casually. I wasn't raiding or doing any other highly visible content, but they basically completely destroyed the game that I was playing in part because they didn't have any access to that feedback.
Yeah, that's fair,
which is how I ended up raiding in the first place. But you know, so I do recognize them wanting to get that feedback and wanting to try and have a place to get that feedback. I don't think this is going to work, in part because this is public.
Yeah.
This is public. There's going to be people with screen names attached to their posts. And I hope to God that at a minimum, the players that are involved in this have pseudonyms for this. Like, I hope that that's mandatory, that you cannot use your actual name on this. Something. Because otherwise, imagine it's me. Okay. And I'm in there and I'm not giving feedback. I'm rating. I'm giving feedback on like the leveling process sucks. Here's the things that I wish you would do to improve like the gameplay of leveling a character to make it fun and enjoyable. So that I can go back to like having that be, you know, my primary form of content. And it doesn't matter if the feedback's valid or good. That's not like there's an entire sector of like raiders and PvPers that are not going to want to hear, you know, so-and-so wants leveling to be more difficult in the, like, making you pay attention sort of way, because the only way they want to engage with it is just, like, mass pulling everything, AOEing it down, and collecting their experience so that they can get to the end game.
Right, yeah.
So no matter what you do, there's going to be someone that, righteously or not, is pissed off at the people on this forum. Whatever feedback they give.
Right. But here's my argument to like why doing anything anonymously ends up hurting it worse, right? Because the moment that you are anonymous, right, as an individual, like you get to say things you might not normally say or do. Well, like
so,
I think it
so I'm I not saying it, like fully anonymous. I mean like so like I my screen name for all of my WoW stuff is Emelson, right? Like if I went and I were on this community thing, which for reference I've not even put in an application, I have no interest in it, I would have a different name on those forms, and it would be I would have a name on those forms and people would recognize that name, but they wouldn't be able to track down the guild that I raid in and you know, that kind of thing. They wouldn't be able to harass me on social media. But they would be able to see that name and know, okay, that same person posted all of this stuff. And the developers would know who that is. But
yeah, I guess
that kind of...
I don't know. Like, I have a... Like, I talked about this a little bit. I think in, like, our, like, Wowhead Discord about this a little bit. And, like, to me, like, you... I feel like being a not... Like, even any sort of anonymity or, like masking who you are in-game, like, from a public forum perspective, like, the problem's going to be is the community, like, regardless of how they do this, it's going to be bad, right? But, like, having a person anonymously post basically lets the community say they don't, like, oh, it's, like, I don't know, like, the larger community or the more vocal community will just sort of push that person off anyway, right? Like, regardless of, like, if your name's anonymous or not, like, you will still be the target if your feedback, like, is taken the That's wrong true. Way or is it, you know, like, so I don't think that helps. Like, it being public to start with is sort of the idea. And then, like, adding another layer between, like, who you are as a player and, like, what is publicly posted, just, like, it's an unnecessary thing to me. Like, the idea here is that, like, as you, like, anytime I've ever looked at sort of these public type forums or quote unquote public councils, right, is like you as an individual are signing up to give feedback. So you need to understand that like you're going to give feedback in a public forum, which means like your name or like your player in this case, or your character is going to be known by, we'll say like hundreds of thousands of people that might read this, right? Maybe that's an overestimation, but like by a number of people. So like be prepared, I guess is the idea, right? Like the internet, like I hate the comment of like the internet's the internet and people are just awful people regardless. But I think the anonymity of the internet allows you to just be who you wouldn't be normally in like public. And I think regardless of the way this works out, if you post on this.
I think, so we're getting sidetracked now, but I don't think anonymity is the issue. Because, I mean, case in point, look at Facebook.
That's like, fair, yeah. People just are just look shitty at Facebook. In general. That's fair. But I mean, like, I guess my point there would be like, you're going to take flack if you post on this, regardless of if they give you a player 123 username or it's your actual character username. Right. So,
yeah,
in that regard, right. I don't. Oh, sorry.
I mean, you're right in that sense. Like there would still be like, you know, in my example, there would still be, you know, player 123 hate posts on like r/WoW and r/competitive WoW and people
or on the general forums. Or in the general right Blizzard there. Forums, right? Like right next to the council forum will be the general forum and there'll be people being like, so-and-so just posted this. Look at this idiot, what they're posting. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So
that happens either way. Yeah. What can't happen if it's with pseudonyms is they can't go to your Twitter feed. They can't go to your Twitter feed.
That's true. They can't go like
harass you that they way. Can't just like carpet bomb your social media presence. I think important because I can always like go and close the WoW forums or like just not log on Reddit. But if I'm, you know, forced off of Twitter and Twitch and literally unable to use Reddit because it's constantly pinging me from people pinging me because they're mad about something I said on the private forums or the council forums or forced off of Discord because I literally like can't use it because I get pinged so much. Like, that's way, way, way worse. Like, imagine being like unable to exist in any public Discord because people wouldn't stop pinging you for something you said on the council forums. Like, the game would actually become unplayable for me.
No, that's fair. I guess that sort of thing would work. Yeah. I mean, the problem is, like, if I was on this council, like, I'd want people to know it so that I could take their feedback and signal boost it. Like, that's the angle I always look at is, like, you almost have a... And people might not look at it this way, but you have almost like a responsibility if you're on this to like
signal boost
submit other people. like submit feedback that you think works or that like as your community that you're a part of, like if you're going to represent, like if all you do is professions, like you're not just going to be, you know, giving professions feedback and you're by yourself. You're probably going to be like, hey, friend X, friend Y, who also is into professions, like what feedback do you want me to boost up? Right. And so,
Yeah,
I guess they can still do it. I guess the pseudonym thing is fine. Like, that's whatever. But I mean, I think there's still like that idea.
What you're saying is kind of like why I feel like this is misguided. Like, they're trying to put it all in the community forums. And really, what they just need to do is have their community management people reach out to the people that are already collecting that feedback. Like
literally, if they wanted Windwalker feedback, you talk to Babs. And Babs will write you a novel on Windwalker feedback. Yeah. And it'll be a novel that like is not like just buff my class and make me do 100% more damage because that's all we need. It's like it'll be feedback that makes gameplay better, that like affects other parts of the class.
Nuanced and full of like, here's all of the bugs that we know about. And I know for a fact, actually, that Babs has been on the secret forums.
Yeah.
I think I'm pretty sure that's public knowledge at this point. I think he's talked about that on this podcast.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying is like this whole thing. And the thing we haven't talked about, and I know we're getting a little bit late in this episode, but the other thing too is that people are done after a year. So they're going to do this process every year. I don't know if you caught that.
I didn't catch that actually. I do. So something that I think is a relevant comparison. So EVE Online has a player council that also has, you know, people get on the council, then they leave the council. The difference is in that game, people vote for the council members, not the developers handpicking them. That's an element where I think it becomes a little bit different. Where, like, for one thing, also EVE is a lot smaller of a game. But that changes the dynamic because now people are like, okay, if this person is on the council, there's a lot of people that like wanted them to be there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's not like Blizzard is picking them and like, yeah. I heard a couple other feedback points too, which is like Blizzard just wants content creators because one of the questions at the end is like, post three things you've built for the community. And it's like, it could be like a YouTube or your Twitch stream or like a tool or something like WoW Analyzer.
Yeah, I mean,
or something.
Yeah. They've already got a content creators Discord, like you said. So this is obviously not targeted at only content creators. This just, the more we talk about this, the more convinced I am that this is just a PR stunt. Nothing is going to come of it.
To me, this is cool. Like, talk to me when they actually can see something that they tried to implement. They got community feedback through this, and it was changed in a positive way. Like, when I see that, then I'm excited. But until then, it's just more noise.
There's a Discord. I call it the Illuminati Discord. It is a Discord with all the different tank theory crafters in it, pretty much. All the different tank theory crafters. There's a couple of high-end raiders in there, too. And there's a couple blues in there. The only thing that the blues have ever done is say, hey, thanks, in response to us pinging them for game-breaking bugs. If they want us to believe that this is actually for realsies, start with that. Start with the AWC and the MDI and the content creator Discords. Like, start with those. Demonstrate that you want to take feedback from those. Don't like build a whole new thing in the hopes that by starting from the ground up, you will be able to take feedback more successfully when the issue has never been people's willingness to give you like high signal, low noise feedback. Yeah.
Or do something, I don't know, crazy, like use your own feedback forms to take feedback and make changes. Like,
see, I understand some of the issue with that because the game is just so big that there is a lot of noise. Like, I mean, we've all been linked to the really bizarro posts on the WoW forums, right?
Yeah, but at the same token, like those have been once in a million, like once a cycle that's there. But then there's multiple instances of like, here is like five or six different posts of like concerted feedback on a specific topic. And like, it's good. And I agree with it.
Yeah.
And like, no response or nothing occurs from it. So, yeah, I mean, I don't, we only have about 10 minutes. So we gotta sort of speed this up, talk about the interview, but I am not looking forward to this. I of course applied because I want to be on it and just shit talk people. But like at the same time, like I just don't. I don't see this doing anything more than just being Blizzard being able to say in a year, oh, but we set up this forum for you guys to give feedback. And here's the one instance out of the entire year we used your feedback to make a change. Meanwhile, they have Azerite Armor 3.0 that still sucks and we still hate it. But
I mean, I don't know. If there's an Azerite Armor Blizzard 3.0, then 10.0 will be the last expansion.
Yeah. Chance. I mean, like, yeah. Sorry, a little bit of a snarky, but I know that what's the guy's name? Hamilton is his last name. One of the developers in Blizzard made a little tweet on his personal Twitter the other week that was like, so happy or so excited about all the fun stuff that I can't wait to show you. And I wanted to respond with, are you going to take feedback on it this time? Because the last three times you didn't, and it sucked.
Yeah. Jeff Hamilton, the guy behind Corruption and
Corruption, Azorite Armor, and what else? He did domination something with sets. Dominations, yeah. And I believe he did the places where legendary powers drop. He assigned them to bosses, was maybe another one of his roles.
That actually turned out okay. It kind of sucks that you can't. It did.
Castle Nathria, second, like, stone, like the best Mistweaver legendary was on Stonefist or whatever. Sludgefist, sorry.
You could get it from LFR. It's fine. No, the real issue is that they never added more drop locations for them. So that the ones that came from Castle Nathria don't also come from Sanctum of Domination. That's the real issue. Yeah. Or you can't buy them.
My only counterpoint to your LFR comment, by the way, is that Sludgefist LFR wasn't released until like 6 weeks after.
All right, you could do normal, okay? Like, if you actually are going to use the legendary that comes off of Sludgefist, you can get a normal group that can clear through Sludgefist. It's not like the raid had this like unkillable mid-tier boss like Painsmith that even on normal, like, pugs are awful at.
Yeah.
Like, Zymox was close, but it was nowhere near as bad as that. But yeah.
That's fair.
We have 7 minutes that we want to get through some of the highlights from this Ian interview. So I'm going to pull up the WoWhead summary of it, and we can go through some of those, because I think we touched on a lot of the bits we wanted to talk about of the community end of it when talking about the public forums or the community council stuff. But
yeah.
So first up on the list, how many people remember literally during the Shadowlands lead up, the basically Ian saying basically never to cross faction raiding?
Yeah,
I do. His response to this was that cross faction radar is, quote, I'd say it is a bit more on the radar. Yes. So sounds like that there are some problems that they have to solve to make it happen. But, you know, maybe we see cross faction raiding in 10.0. Or maybe 9.2.5, hey, that would be awesome.
I don't think it's gonna be that soon. This is a 10.0 feature. I'd almost not guarantee it, but I'm on the more likely than less likely.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there. At the same time, I don't know how rating, like, there's rate.
This is a huge tech. This is not a like story issue. This is a tech issue. This is like a fundamental change the way the game plays issue in terms of factions and stuff like that.
I agree with you there. I just, I feel like raiding in WoW, at least at the Mythic level, is going to continue to struggle without this. At least like the continued like elimination of Alliance raiding on North American realms outside of Oceania.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you'll eventually need this because the moment that you can do cross faction raiding, I'll go back Alliance. I hate like the Horde cities and like the races. I am not a fan of the aesthetics of that part of the game. But
yeah,
I play it because I have to.
The story, like, there were a bunch of people in Guild that during the BFA story with Sylvanas being a complete shit and the whole Horde going along with it, that, you know, we're like, so when are we going Alliance, guys? Like, there's not a lot of reasons to be Horde right now, except for population.
Exactly. No, yeah. So this will be interesting to see if they actually pull it off. But this is like an expansion level type system. So, So I guess the other thing that they highlighted here was sort of on covenant swapping and like the feedback that Ian and the team received. And this is, so by the way, this is a cop-out answer, by the way, because he basically goes like, well, we were off, but we were basically following along the founders and like our predecessors in terms of like how we wanted to design the game. Ian's been a part of this team for 10 years. He has led, he led the development of Legion BFA and now this expansion. Like, he is one of those people that has these ideals. So like, to him to put it on people like predecessors and founders, like, he is a leader of this team. Like, he's just stubborn. Like, it's funny that people think about like, oh, Ian, you know, he doesn't control all the game. like he, I think his mindset in a lot of the way the game is designed today, you can see, right? Like Ian's the type of player that I feel like he wants to do everything on one character. That character is his world and like how he views sort of WoW. Like he's literally played Shaman for 17 years. Like he's not like,
yeah.
So, I mean, like to me, this is like a cop out answer of like, oh, we got it wrong, but we were like basing it on how our old leaders would have had us design the game. I'm like, no, dude, like you screwed up and you can't just say, hey, we screwed up. Like,
yeah, that's my point. I mean, this is another thing. So the answer for those that can't read the screen because they're listening to the audio version of this, his answer was basically that they've had a shift in their philosophy. That their initial approach to Shadowlands was based on some of the ideas from classic WoW around having friction and making changes, having to commit to making choices, and to making it important that your investment in your character, you know, couldn't just be replicated by, you know, an alt, basically. But also there's another cop-out answer about conduit energy and like meaningful choice, but I mean a lot of it, this really falls flat to me for a couple reasons. For one thing, the only thing in classic that was like restricted in your ability to change it was talents, and that cost gold, and it cost some gold. But there was never like conduit energy could just tell you, you can't change your conduits anymore. Like just point blank, there's nothing you can do about it. You cannot change your conduits anymore. You know, switching covenants, there's something telling you, you literally cannot change your covenant this week. You have to wait until next week to complete the next quest. Yeah. You literally cannot switch covenants right now. You have to wait. Yeah. As opposed to classic, if you wanted to change your talents, you just went and paid. If you didn't have the gold, you went and gambled for it, or begged your buddy in guild, or begged on the streets of Orgrimmar or Ironforge. But you, like, as long as you had gold, you could change it whatever the hell you wanted. You could, you know, go and do PvP in one build and then go and do a dungeon in another and then go and raid in a third all in the same night and not have to worry about it. Like, it would cost you 120 gold, but you could do it all. And that's the same kind of thing that if you play literally any RPGs, any single player RPG that has come out in like forever. Honestly, I can't remember the last one where every single choice that I made, like, I couldn't change it.
Right.
You look at some of the more popular ones like Divinity 2, where you like literally once you reach the second chapter of Divinity 2, you can at any point in time go to your like home base and change everything about your character. Not just like the normal stuff. I'm pretty sure you can change like race and gender and everything. That's crazy. You can completely rebuild your character from the ground up. Like I went and had a build that I tried and I didn't like it. And I went and changed my character from being like a necromancer to being a fire mage and like just completely rebuilt from the ground up. And I could do that. And I've been playing a lot of Pillars of Eternity recently. At any point in time, I can take a character. I can go and at any inn, I can pay some gold and basically remake every decision that I made in picking their talents and their spells from level one to whatever level they are now. You know, this whole thing just like, I don't even know. Just dumb.
No, yeah, I don't get the design stuff. It's, they just, to this day, they can't say that we just messed up. Like, and as simple as that, like they say they made a wrong choice here, but they said, it's always like, oh, we made a wrong choice, but. Right, which is like, just be clear literally, that you...
He says, there's some stubbornness, but...
Yeah. Just like, I don't know. So, I mean, that's the choices thing. We'll see. Again, this is sort of that type of idea where they're publicly stating it, so maybe they make a change, but we'll see if they actually do this moving forward. Yeah. I know we're a little bit over, but I did want to touch on two interesting points at the end here, which was around 9.2 and then... really around 9.1. So basically Ian described 9.1.5 as a hackathon, which if you don't know what that is, essentially it's a like a short, it's a development term where like a development team might come together over a weekend and like build something in short order, like essentially hack something together. It's not a real thing. Might not be a big feature, but like you see it sometimes in game development, like a small little game or like feature development in certain areas.
One of the, so the Magic the Gathering kind of development and design people do hackathons where they all put together like miniature sets and like prototype stuff. And like they just have a week where they do whatever. And that's actually been one of the sources of several of their like most popular, you know, designs over the past like 5 years. Some had better long-term consequences than others.
Yeah.
But a lot of very unique and interesting stuff came out of those. And that's the kind of thing where hearing about this honestly is the most encouraging part of the interview for me, that they did something like that.
Right. And the nice part is that the way they described it as a hackathon means the majority of their effort wasn't put in at the time to 915. So that means though I were seeing potentially 912 so early. And really my sort of takeaway from this is that 9.2 ends up being probably the final expansion because they've been putting a lot of time into reconfiguring the end of 9.2 and the transition to 10.0. And I feel like we probably get, just from a story and gameplay perspective, really more from a story perspective, more like the 9.3 part of the story of how this expansion ends up being a component of 10.0. And so like 9.2 becomes the final patch with 10.0 being like the continuation. And maybe the jailer doesn't die at the end of 9.2, or maybe he does when he wasn't really supposed to in the original story, and like the transition to 10.0 becomes easier. But I mean, for all intents and purposes, like 9.2 to me, like I'm 80% sure that at this point 9.2 is the final expansion, or sorry, final patch before 10.0. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there will be a 9.25. I think it will be a lot like 9.15, but I think that there will be a 9.25. I am skeptical that there will be a 9.3. Yeah. The extent of it, like his answer is basically we will be talking more about the conclusion to Shadowlands in the future. 9.2 is coming soon. We have more planned, but it's hard to say too much more without spoiling the story, which basically to me reads we're gonna do 9.25 and it might have like a dungeon or a mini raid in it, you know, Ruby Sanctum style. But it is not going to be, there's not going to be a full like 9.3 content patch, which at this point, like they've done a lot with 915 to regain some of the goodwill for the expansion. But at the end of the day, they're still just like, they needed to take this feedback during 9.0. Yep. The covenant change is something they could have done in 9.0.5. There could have been a 9.0.5 3 months into the expansion that unlocked covenants swapping. They removed conduit energy that, you know, addressed issues with the Maw and with Torghast that fixed just so many issues throughout the game. And if that had happened, we would not be having this conversation right now. We would be having a very different conversation.
No, we'd be stoked. We'd be playing a fun game.
Yep. It is something that, I mean, that's basically my take on it. I think we will get one more piece of content after 9.2. I think it will be small, though. I think we're talking like Trial of Valor or Ruby Sanctum or whatever.
Yeah, like 1-2 boss, maybe raid or maybe a dungeon. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fair. Like that.
So I guess for context, small relative to a typical WoW content patch, which is new zone with all of the stuff like that comes with that, all of the cosmetics and everything that come with that, and a new raid and often a new dungeon. Like that's a lot bigger than a 2 boss raid or a dungeon. Like, yeah. So
yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at on it. But
Ion and his interviews.
I just can't get over it. Actually, so we should wrap up, but did you watch Preach's reaction to the interview?
I did. No, not to the interview. I watched his reaction to the council, but not to the interview.
So. Yeah. So he's got some thoughts on the some of which I echoed here about the interview, specifically the RPG stuff. It's
yeah.
There's a reason that all Rang Hollow, all Rag Hollow.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
But yeah, awesome. You got anything else you want to cover, or should we go ahead and wrap this up?
No, I think we wrap it up. I think we're a little bit over, but yeah, no, that was
a little bit over.
That was a lot more to talk about, I thought, than we would this week. But yeah, some good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we spent a lot of time actually talking about the raid changes, as well as talking about the community council.
Yes.
And the season mastery stuff. So, but yeah, that's been the show for today. Thank you all for watching and or listening. If you enjoy the show and you want to support it and the other work that we do over on the Peak of Serenity, you can do that over at our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. And of course, if you don't want to or aren't able to contribute financially, we would encourage you to join our Discord. The Discord is open to everybody. If you're a patron, you do get a special channel just for patrons. It is actually fairly active, unlike some patron channels I've been in. But the lounges in our Discord for each spec are super active, and I have a feeling that the Brewmaster one is probably talking about PoE right now. I have not looked, but I'm channeling my psychic like connection to Brew Lounge, and I'm pretty sure they're talking about PoE.
Nice.
But yeah, that's it for the show this week. Thank you all for watching, and we will see you next week.
See ya!